What if you could step into a room filled with the people who hold the keys to the big stages, the book deals, and the most powerful platforms for your voice? The Gateway Gathering and Pitch Fest is a visibility accelerator for thought leaders that connects you to the people who can open doors. Think literary agents, TED leaders, producers, editors, and conference designers like me, Jacqueline Fletcher Johnson. Join us January 13th to the 15th. Put your mission in motion at gateway-project.com.
Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, burnout expert, keynote speaker, and author focused on burnout as a match issue at work. Fried looks at burnout as information, not failure. When people, roles, expectations, leadership behaviors, and systems fall out of alignment, burnout is often the signal. Seasons 1 through 10 of Fried focus primarily on individual burnout and recovery, and those episodes are still available. You can use the Fried episode finder to find the conversations that best match what you're dealing with right now. Starting in season 11, the focus shifts to the workplace. The conversations center on how leaders and organizations can improve match and get rid of burnout in realistic, sustainable ways. I also work directly with companies and events through burnout and emotional intelligence keynotes, workshops, and longer-term advisory work. If burnout has been getting your attention, this podcast will help you understand what it's pointing to and how to find a better match.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.
Fried fam. The world brings people together, and I've said this in the front of quite a few podcast episodes, the world brings people together sometimes in unexpected ways. And I was connected with Tess through a mutual friend and podcast friend and speaker friend. And then I was on Tess's podcast a while ago, and now we are flipping the script. Tess is coming here. And the base conversation we're going to have today after we hear Tess's burnout story is burnout and the generations. And it is especially poignant this week because I went through a Facebook post that made me want to shake people that we'll talk about in a moment. But before we get there, let me introduce today's guest, Tess Brigham, who is often called the millennial therapist. She helps companies understand and connect with the next generation of talent. A psychotherapist, certified coach, and TEDx speaker with 2 decades of experience, she teaches leaders how to reduce burnout, improve communication across generations, and build healthier workplaces. Tess writes for Forbes, appears regularly in the media, and brings her unique mix of clinical insight and practical tools to every workshop and keynote. Plus, she is a podcast host of
The Gen Mess with Tess.
The Gen Mess with Tess, which is just, I wanted you to say it because it's such a fun title.
Yes, yes.
So she's also that didn't fit into this short bio. Tess, tell us about your quarter life crisis.
Yes, my quarter life crisis.
Let's just jump right all the way in.
Yeah. So, well, growing up, I had this singular focus my entire life. I've always been an ambitious person and wanted to do big things. And somewhere in my, you know, childhood bedroom, I liked movies and I liked entertainment. So I was like, oh, I'm going to work in the entertainment business. I'm going to be a big Hollywood hotshot. This is, you know, this will be my life. And I did everything I was supposed to do. I was a film major in college. I interned for the summer at Columbia Pictures back in the 90s, right? My friends were getting tans and hanging out, and I was working 40 hours a week back when you didn't have to pay interns, right? when it was still legal. You could make someone work for free. I worked for free. I then got an internship working for Warner Brothers and at college. I mean, I just boom, 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 did everything. And at 24, I moved to LA. I got a job right away. And by 27, I was just completely burned out, exhausted, didn't know what I was doing with my life. I had no money. And I was basically returning home to go back home and live with my mother, who's in Northern California. And in those years, I mean, they were very intense years, those 20-something years, which is why I love working with young people. These years are really intense. you know, when you get to my age, like years will just go by. Not much will happen. But these years are so intense and so much happened during that time. And what I recognized and realized during this process was that I never stopped and really thought, oh, how do I want to spend my time? Who do I want to surround myself with? Who's important to me? Because I realized I was working around people I did not like. The woman that I worked for actually was great. And that was the other thing that pushed me, was that she's amazing and wonderful. And a lot of people wanted my job. And if I wasn't happy, then I'm never going to be happy anywhere else in LA and in this industry. So yeah, I packed it all up and I came back, and having these moments. And I think that when you tell the story, it seems kind of like, and then I did this and then I did that, but it was years of, you know, who am I? What am I going to do? What's going to happen? And then it just turned out that I didn't even, this is sort of the interesting thing about the world and about how things happen, is that I never even thought about this particular story or any of this when I became a therapist. And it wasn't until I started working with 20 somethings that I was like, oh, wait a second. I went through something like this. I went through this. I went through a quarter life crisis. Oh, that's what that was. So that's what I love about what I do now, is that I get to help other people, you know, not make the same mistakes, but maybe help them pull themselves out of these places, maybe faster than how I got out.
Yeah. Do you think it was a mistake?
No, I shouldn't have said mistake. I mean, because I don't think, and again, I'm Northern California woo-woo. I believe things happen for a reason. I believe there is, you know, I believe that we have free will and we have control over our lives, but there are some things that are out of our control that happen. And I do think there is a, you know, you can believe the universe is happening to you or for you, right? So I try to see how it's going to help me, for me. But I would have appreciated someone like me at that time. And that's really what I...
So that's the interesting part, because I feel like at that age, I was so sure of what I wanted that I wouldn't have listened to you at all. No offense.
Mm-hmm. No, no, no.
But I was like, I was so sure about what I wanted, and it eventually led me to burnout. Mm-hmm. But there's no way that you could have convinced me that any of the decisions I was making were going to like end up at a place that was not like joy and happiness and success, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but you wouldn't have come to see me.
No.
Yeah.
No, I would. I was so convinced mm-hmm. at the time, and I was right and wrong, both mm-hmm. in different ways. But you also said one of the things that you say in your story that you sent in is that you moved home. It was not easy. And you got a call at 27 that a college friend passed away.
Yeah.
What did that do?
Yeah, that was, I mean, in some ways, that was the impetus to get me to leave LA. Yeah. I had already decided to leave my job. I was going to, quote unquote, find myself. Again, I had no money. I don't know what business I thought. I mean, I really did not think it through at all. But in the first day of my, you know,
freedom,
I guess, of, you know, in this finding myself, I get this phone call that my college roommate, Heather, had passed away. And it was, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of this shocking, because you don't expect at 27 to get those phone calls. I very much in that time of my life, I was so focused on the next thing, and that I wasn't really keeping in touch with my friends. I went to school on the East Coast, so it's a little bit harder. But at the same time, I had another friend that was in California, and she went back all the time and visited people. Like, I just wasn't, I was too busy. I was too busy, you know, being a big shot, trying to do this, that I didn't bother to, you know what was going on. And yeah, I went back East for her memorial funeral. And it was this very strange thing of, all these years later, kind of like, hi, hello, here we all are. You know, our lives haven't changed that much in some ways, but maybe they have. And just revisiting all these people that I don't think I'd ever see again from college. So there was some really nice things about it. And I really took her passing as a a bit of a sign that it was time for me to go and leave LA, but it was also a little bit of, okay, my friend has passed away. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it happened. So what do I take from this? And I really felt like I need to take what I learned from Heather, what she gave me in our relationship. And she was a fierce person. She would go out and do things. She was strong. And I was just like, I just need to, you know, channel all that and move forward. And that's been, I had another friend pass away when I was 45. And again, it's sort of the same story. You kind of try to muster, you know, whatever, what is the purpose of this? Why is this happening? But I have an unusual story in the sense that people will ask me like, oh, don't you go on girls trips? Don't you do this and that? I'm like, you know, like they're gone. The people that are my closest friends are gone. Like I don't have that sort of experience that a lot of people have.
Yeah. This is, let's do death for a minute before we get into the generations, which is, I know your topic, but the death part, I think I always had a lot of it in my life. Mm-hmm. I had aunts. My father is one of nine. My mother is one of seven. So between aunts and uncles, I had a lot of people. And my parents, my mother was in the middle. My father was towards the end. So by the time I was a teenager, we had already lost people. My mother lost her parents by the time I was 6 months old. Her mother died when she was 17. I lost a friend in high school. And my father had this, or has this, still says to this day, like, well, you could get hit by a bus and die tomorrow, Kate. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And the lesson around death and like taking advantage of life and not letting yourself sour in spaces that don't work for you at all didn't really hit me, even though I had seen it over and over and my father had said it over and over. Mm-hmm. It didn't really hit me until my friends started getting ill. It wasn't even death at that point, but when I was like late 20s, early 30s, and my first friend got cancer, and then my second friend got cancer, and then a friend couldn't have a baby and was doing infertility treatments, and then somebody did, and like all of these really big life things started happening, and I was looking around, and I was like, oh shit, we could all literally die. Like, mm-hmm. This message from my father from all my whole entire life finally hit me, and I was like, I don't have to do this. I could die. If I died tomorrow, mm-hmm. Am I satisfied with what I created? And mm-hmm. I was just talking to Sarah Fried's co-host and our director of coaching here. We were on the phone yesterday and we were talking about this. And I said, you know, ever since I created Fried and it's reached, you know, close to 1 million people, and it's people have sent me letters and emails and messages and things. Ever since I've created this thing in my life, I feel like I'd be okay. Like if I died, mm-hmm. I'd be like, I'm really proud of what I have used my life for. Mm-hmm. And so we created over time when we train other people in burnout work and burnout coaching, which we haven't done in ages, but always could. When we do that, one of the first things I have people do is write their own eulogies.
It's that Stephen, is that Stephen Covey?
I made that. I thought I made that up. I'm sure somebody else has done it in the past. Most things have been done and repeated, but it was just, my friend Eva and I used to do this in Poland with some of our coaching clients. And I started doing it here too. Like, what do you actually want people to say? How do you mm-hmm. want to live? Because people do the core values exercise and they lie. They struggle with it. They want it to be correct. That, you yes. know, like you were saying earlier, like you were so ambitious that you let everything else fall apart. And that's one of the things that I think gets people stuck in burnout is like, you feel like you get to a point where you feel like, or I felt like having ambition wasn't a value that was valuable. And I am an ambitious person. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn how to balance that ambition with other things, but I also had to learn to allow myself to have it without feeling guilty about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, yeah. People want you to say family on the, for the top row of everything, yeah. Family first, you know, mm-hmm. like not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially for women. I mean, yeah. I have a son, right? Could I acknowledge my career and all of this work that I've done before him? I mean, yeah. But it's interesting you're talking about, because burnout is, you know, it's about obviously overworking, overpromising, overdelivering, all those things. And I, what's interesting about it is I used to work in drug and alcohol treatment, and I have a lot of clients do that. And I think that I often say that, right, this was an, this is an acceptable way of being an addict. And it's one of the acceptable ways. And it's the one way that we really struggle with pushing against it, because it is an addiction. Work is an addiction. People pleasing is an addiction. You know, these are things that we get caught in this cycle and believe that we can't stop. And, but there aren't, there are not a lot of resources out there. There's nothing to help people because we've made it socially acceptable.
Well, that's a little rude. I mean,
yeah. I'm saying, so not this, I mean, on the whole, meaning that you can find a million and one drug and alcohol treatment centers, yeah, but it's very hard to find a center for people that are burned out from, like, high achievers that are burned out from work.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
It really requires the individual to go seek the help that they need versus it being readily available.
Yeah. And even, I mean, even drug treatment centers, most people don't have the finances to be able to use them. You know,
yeah. Like, it's like, oh, yeah,
they're not exactly accessible in all cases. But they do, I think there is more coming out with time. And here's, let's get into what pissed me off this week on Facebook. And okay, I want to hear what you have to say about it. So somebody that I am very loosely connected to wrote something about burnout. She's also an acupuncturist, wrote a thing about burnout. And some people responded to it. And she asked a question, you know, how do you treat it maybe in your practice if you're an acupuncturist, which is a whole separate conversation. And then she said, sort of like, what do you think about it? And the first comment, the very first comment, wait, I'm going to find it so that I can, was a woman saying that people burn out because they don't have good time management skills. They're not organized and they're disconnected from reality.
Okay.
And I was like, that's interesting. And then she commented again further down and she said that kids these days, and mentioned that she was a boomer, want everything and don't want to work for it. And so I started, like, I was getting ready for a fight. I was holding my shoulders back, taking my hoops out.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, I'm getting ready. And, you know, I did say, well, statistically, that's the things that you're saying are incorrect. And here's why things are, we had difficulties too, but we were more resilient. That's what I wanted to pop her in the throat. So can we talk about that?
Yes. Yes. Because this makes me crazy because every single time that I go and give a talk about, I have this talk that I do, it's called Embracing Gen Z, where I'm really trying to get people to understand, like, this is the reality for the average Gen Zer in the world today. This is what's happening. And so now you need to adjust how you're treating them. You need to adjust how you're approaching this and your thinking. But every single time, there is always one, at least one, if not more, one, and it's usually a white older male, always baby boomer, that will ask me, why don't young people want to work today?
Yeah.
And it cracks me up because I'm thinking, I'm thinking people criticized your generation. You guys were the original rebels and the anarchists and all this other
kind of stuff. Every generation has always criticized the generation after them. Meanwhile, they're responsible for the generation after them. You raised us. You did this. Like, I didn't do it. I didn't decide how to be raised. You did this.
Yeah. And we just fall into this trap of believing, you know, at the older that we get, that we, you know, really understand what it's like to be a young person in the world today. And I had one guy that actually yelled at me during a talk about Vietnam and how, you know, Vietnam and all of this, you know, the fear and all that. And I give them that being, you know, my father and mother made a lot of decisions based on Vietnam, you know, to get married and now my sister, like, I get that. But then I just said, well, how many school shootings have you survived? He didn't like that because it's a little bit like, you know, yes, it's not Vietnam. Yes, it's not a war, but it's the same anxiety, the same fears, the same, I can't control this. This thing could happen to me and I could die just in a different form.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that, some older people, some people get it and some people don't. And there's a lot of resentment towards, you know, younger people today because they are, I mean, they're always, like you said, there's always resentment. I'm Gen X, right? And so it was like after baby boomers in Vietnam and all of that, it was like, we stopped a war and you all just want to fight for your right to party. But when I started working with millennials, same thing, millennials are going to ruin the world. They're entitled, they're lazy, they're this. And it's fascinating to me to say, I've had the same conversations, exact same conversations 10, 15 years later.
Yeah. And so when this was coming up, she said, well, we had the same difficulties. We were more resilient. And I was like, well, no, you had different. I'm not saying that your difficulties were worse or better.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a trauma comparison game. Like,
yeah.
Not like show me mine and I'll show you yours. Like none of that. That's not what I'm saying. But the fact of the matter is, whatever you went through, probably we went through similar things in childhood for different reasons. And then when you got to be an adult, the amount of money that you got paid to do your job was enough to pay for a life.
Yes.
And that's not true anymore. So
yes,
we have this core sense of financial safety that doesn't exist for us the way it existed for people before us.
Mm-hmm.
It just
Absolutely.
Doesn't. And can we go all the way back and say, yes, but they lived through the Depression? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That was their, like, we all have every generation and every series of years. Sometimes the generations, the same problem crosses over multiple generations. But we are all dealing with different problems for different reasons, and different mm-hmm. parts of our safety is being messed with.
Yes.
So that was making me crazy. And then somebody else commented on it. I'm going to read it to you, and we're going to be crazy about this. So most of my fried people already know this, but for people who might be new here, although I live an abundant, lovely life today, I did not grow up this way at all. Very close to the poverty line my whole entire life, lived in a drug-ridden city with gangs and guns and things. So like, right.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's that. And here's the comment. It's easy for those brought up in relative abundance to become self-centric and believe the previous generations toiled for me so I don't have to.
Mm.
So he's saying that we're living now, the result is a meaningless life because we are not choosing to do difficult things in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have meaning, we don't have a life worth living, and we don't know how precious a single breath is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you figured out the world.
I know. I've never met anyone that said, the previous generations did so much, now I don't have to do anything. I've never heard anyone say that in my life. Have you?
No. But that is the belief, right? That's the false belief around these stories that you hear about young people. And again, I've been working with young people for a long time. I can't even tell you 15 years ago about how, when I told people what I did, they would want to corner me and tell me about this millennial in their office that is driving everyone crazy. And that's the other part of it too, is this is what we hear is of the young person that asked some outrageous thing, because it's like, yeah, that is too much. It is out, but that is not the average young person, but that becomes the story. And so, and I don't know, I think some of it for the older generations, I mean, I can speak for myself. I think there's a bit of resentment too around, God, these young people are really smart. Why didn't I do that back then? Like, why didn't I think about that back then? But again, the world was very different.
Yeah.
And I think that technology and these phones are making our brains work overtime. They're busier. We're having a harder time just concentrating and focusing. And so I think that's the other part of it too, is maybe you see the Depression and people working hard and toiling away and eating a potato. But today, so now you're just seeing young people say, well, I'm going to leave the office at 5 or whatever it is. And it seems like, oh God. But there's also that other part of, well, you have to really think about what that means in the world today to just basically cut things off at a certain time, how difficult that is, and how that's mental. The everything now is really, it's about mental health. We're really moving into that place because we have to, because technology, phones, the world that we live in, it's too much if we don't.
Yeah. I know someone who's constantly writing something to the effect of, if I told my grandmother how tired I was from sitting at a computer all day, she'd whip me, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like she toiled all day in the farms and worked sun up till sundown, and she would like have a fit. And, you know, something about like desk work isn't real work. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wait a second. It's not fit. I mean, it is physical because these chairs are terrible for us, but it's not physical in a way that farming is physical, but it's a completely different use of energy. It's not that you're not using energy. It's just a completely different way of using energy. And you're not getting the things, the benefits that you would get of being outside and being under the sun and being, you know, getting your vitamin D and getting your movement in and making sure your muscles were functioning and getting, you know, all of, like, you're not getting those health benefits of doing that part of it either. So the point isn't to say, for me, it's like, there's no great generation. There's no perfect generation. Nobody's doing it all right, but nobody's doing it all wrong either.
Yeah. We're just trying to figure it out as we go. I mean, that's each generation is responding to what's happening in the world and just trying to figure it out.
Well, responding to what's happening in the world and responding to the lessons that they got while they were growing up.
Yes. Right? What because they saw I with was, their parents.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was born in 1982. I'm an elder millennial according to the rules, right? Mm-hmm. I am. Probably a little more Gen Z than millennial. I have an older sister. My parents were encouraged a lot of independence and hard work. So maybe slightly more in on that part of the spectrum. And yet I remember growing up being told that I could pretty much do whatever I wanted as long as I worked hard enough. Mm-hmm. And the goal wasn't like it, the boomer goal was work. Kristen Scroggins always talks about that. Like the as a boomer, if you had a job and you could work, that was satisfaction, was having a job and being able to work. Like your input into society was work. We got told that our input into society was our happiness.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. More, right? Yes.
More so than work.
More so than work. Yeah.
And more so than previous generations. Meanwhile, what a shitty message. Like happiness is so fleeting and so not something that you can aim for all the time. It's just not, it's not a reasonable life. So it's just, we're all just facing different things, you guys. And it's okay that we all have our own problems in our own way with whatever parents we had and generation we grew up in and cultural problems we were facing and whatever. Mm-hmm. All that being said, people are saying, but why are millennials more burnt out than anybody else? So number one question, are millennials more burnt out than anyone else? And two, if they are, why?
I mean, I don't have stats in front of me, but from what I've observed and seen, I think they are.
Yeah,
I do. Why? I really, really do. Because they were, unfortunately, the guinea pig generation in some ways. They were the first generation of young people that entered into the workforce, out into the world during a time where we all had a platform to criticize them. Because like I said, people were criticizing us, people were worried about us, but it was like a little news story on the local news. And then maybe an article over here. It wasn't something that you could talk about, but then suddenly you could complain about Chad the millennial on Twitter for, you know, as much time as you want. And then other people can chime in. And we all know, right? There's that group effect, that consensus effect that happens of like, yeah, I see this. Yeah, I see that. And that's how a lot of these things came about. So they very much were the first generation. So there was so much criticism of them. The other problem, the other issue was that we did not quite put together was that because of technology, the work that we were doing was allowed to be 24/7. So I would say that over the years, I had these millennial clients that would tell me like, oh my God, I went to Paris for the weekend and I could work or I could do this and that. And I'm like, God, because I was chained to a desk, you know, this was back where nothing moved. So that's amazing and wonderful. But at the same time, it means that you can work anytime that you want. Yeah. And one of the hardest parts about, you know, when you first get into the working world is just trying to kind of navigate. You're young, people don't really respect you, you're kind of dismissed, and you're trying to find your place. You want to do a good job, you want to please them. So of course, when your boss texts you on a Saturday, you're going to respond. And if you don't respond, you know, you'll feel guilt or shame or whatever it is, or what, I might not have a job on Monday. And I didn't have any of that. My first jobs out of college, I worked like 9:30 to 5:30. You know, when I moved to Hollywood, the hours got much, much longer, like 7-8 o'clock at night. But even still, when I left that building, I was done. My boss was not calling me. He had no way of getting hold of me. No one asked me to do anything on the weekends unless I had obligated myself to going to see some play or show or whatever it is. It was, the boundaries were created for me very early on. So by the time I could work all the time, I was at an age where I could set those boundaries. I understood that. I knew that. And I still struggle. I mean, even today, having your own business, it's very easy to work all the time. So they had that. And no one taught them that. And so I think that combination, I also want to say they really got hit hard in different places, right? The first one being the 2008-2009 crisis. Yeah. A lot of young people graduated during that time. Yeah. And I've had a lot of clients that graduated during that time. And what I saw was their paths to careers, they're now on a path and in a better place. But many of them had to go to grad school right away, even though they didn't want to. Many of them had to take jobs that weren't really interested. Some of my male clients, especially because they didn't feel good in work very early on, like really hurt their egos and sense of self and confidence, and that kind of, they brought them with them. And then obviously there are other millennials that were graduated in 2014, 2015, when things were different. But then here we go, you're all, you know, getting married, having kids. Oh, here's the pandemic. And now you have 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, because it was mainly millennials that had these little kids that really impacted them. My son was 12, 13 when all this happened, because I was like, oh God, he's in his room. He doesn't even want to talk to me. Yeah. So I could work. I could do my job. And it just felt like thing after thing after thing getting hit. So yeah, I do. And what Gen Z has done that is, and I think this is why they're so amazing to me, what they've done is they're observers. They've been watching, because they've been watching the world. And what they're watching are, they're watching their parents work incredibly hard for what? To be laid off, to not be able to go on vacation. They watch millennials get educated when they didn't even need the education. And now they're in all this debt. That's another big thing. Yeah. I graduated college. I was very lucky. I graduated with no debt, but even the people that
$100,000.
But the people that I knew where we were going to school at the time, they might've graduated with debt, but not 6 figures. It yeah. was not 6 figures. Yeah. And that makes a huge difference as well, because, you know, once you get to a certain number, it's like, am I ever going to pay this off? I mean, it feels like this never ending thing. So, and I think a lot of young millennials took jobs that they maybe didn't love or want to do, but they took them because they could afford to pay their student loans.
Yeah. Student loans is a messy one, and it's something that there's so divisive. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you shouldn't have taken the money if you don't want to pay it back, and all, yeah. All this pushback. The school that I went to and the schooling that I did, so my master's degree is in Chinese medicine. It's only done at private schools. There's only probably 12 of them in the country, so you don't have a ton of option. And mm-hmm. none of them are state schools. None of them have scholarship programs. They're all these tiny ass private schools that are for profit. Mm-hmm. So there's no getting around, like, I'm sorry, I didn't grow up in a family that had extra money to send me to college. I bartended and waitressed my whole way through school and still had to borrow the maximum just to be able to pay my rent and buy books. Mm-hmm. So by the time I graduated, I had $100,000 in student loans to pay back.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I moved to Europe. Lucky me, right? Cool. But I'm working in a country where the dollar is 4 to 1. So for every 4 zloty I made 1 American dollar. Mm. So the most expensive acupuncture treatment in the country at that time was around 100 zloty, which is $25.
Wow.
So I had to pay back $100,000 student loan, making $25 per patient. Mm-hmm. In a foreign country, learning a foreign language, building a business in a place that I had never lived in a language that I didn't know.
Yes.
But I was told my whole life that if you just Work hard and follow your heart. You'll end up in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's also a part of this too. The messaging with kids changed. I was born in 1973, so I'm like firmly a Gen Xer. And I was told you could do anything, but it's going to require hard work. Yeah. And I think that by the time the millennials came about, it was like they forgot the other part of it. It was just like, you can do anything. It's all about happiness. So I grew up with the belief that, because I mean, listen, I was a film major. You know, my parents were paying for that. So, you know, I too wanted that dream. You know, I thought that that dream was what I was supposed to chase after. But for millennials, you know, they, the messaging they were given when they in school was, and this was the whole thing, that you were called the trophy generation. And again, it was the adults that were giving out the trophies. What I love is you all want a trophy. It's like, who was buying the trophies?
Yeah. And that was the trophies. I wasn't of that. That didn't happen until a little bit after me. But I still got the message that there's going to be hard work involved. That was still part of my, still part of the things that I heard. But there was this, like, your happiness is the thing that matters and you have to follow your heart. And like, sometimes hearts don't pay, folks.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and it worked out for me. I worked my ass off in Poland. I built an incredible business. I paid off my student loans in 10 years, which is unreasonable.
That's pretty amazing.
That is unreasonable. I spent all my spare money on my student loans for my first 10 years, but no shit, I burnt out. Yes, of course.
And where are you now? You're at zero.
Right.
You're burned out at zero.
Yes.
And so go now, go for it, you know, go do it for it. Do, you know, go after those, go after those things.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, and that's what I try to explain to these older people that come to the talks and are asking me all these questions about why don't young people want to work? And it's I'll ask them, when you graduated from college, did you have debt? No. When you graduated from college, did you have a job? Yes. Were you able to live on your own? Yes. I made no money like the first year out of college because I worked in the arts. And this is one thing with Hollywood. It doesn't pay what people think. You eventually make money, but us assistants and, you know, associates make nothing. So by the time I was going to say, sorry, this is one thing that happens when you get to be in your 50s. You lose your train of thought. What was I talking about?
That's all right. Gen Z and things that
Sorry. I made no money and I was able to afford an apartment in San Francisco of all places. Because San Francisco used to be affordable.
At the time. Right. At the time. Yeah.
At the time it was affordable. So the world that we live in, even though I wasn't making a ton of money, I was able to afford a great life in San Francisco and in my 20s. And even LA, I was able to do it in that way. And that's the other thing I hear from people now who are trying to become assistants in LA. They still don't pay that much more. They're not paying much more than they were paying me. And so then what happens is this. We now have industries where you get a lot of very privileged people.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing about working in Hollywood is that there was a certain amount of privilege to it because my parents supplemented my income. You could not have student loans. Like you had to have, you first had to have connections to get in and then you had to have, you know, this ability to do this work for no money. And it's the same thing with publishing is another great example of what 50, 60,000 living in New York City. So who can afford that? Now you're looking at now what books are getting published, what movies are getting made, that's the other part. If you ever look at the glut of entertainment, you're not happy or books, it's this. And even my degree, I'm a marriage and family therapist. And even that is, there's a little bit of privilege to this as well, because it's not like social work where they've set it up where you just work for 2 years, then you take the test and you're done. It's really, you know, our thing is, you have to get all these hours and they have to be in certain categories. And I mean, it takes a long, long time. I mean, it's just, but you can afford to not make any money for a long time. I mean, you know, you have to, you're not going to make money for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So again, yes, but I see people who go to law school and they're miserable in their jobs, but because they took out student loans from undergrad and law school, they can't leave either. So it's got nothing to do with the profession that you pick in many ways, right? They would have said, well, don't become in Chinese medicine. There's no money in that. It's like, well, okay, being a lawyer, yeah, one of these big law firms, they make a lot of money and they are still struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that you said in your TEDx, I think, if I remember correctly, that, you know, our incomes have not gone up in proportion to housing costs and education costs. And housing costs have gone up by like 300%. And you know, incomes have gone up by like 70%. It's like, well, that's not.
Do the math.
Sheila on Facebook, like, no, we're not facing the same things that you were facing. We're facing different things. We're facing threats to our basic ability to function on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
So in the world where all of those things are true, and this is hard, and money is out there somewhere, but not always in our pockets, the fuck do we do?
Yeah, I think it really starts with you. You know, you have to accept what reality is.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not about saying, oh, what's her name? Sheila. Yeah. Sheila's
her name, but yeah.
You know, it's not about saying, well, I'm right and Sheila's wrong, or this is just how it's going to be. I'm going to throw my hands up. It's like, yeah, these are the stresses that you're facing. These are the things that are happening.
Yeah.
And so what do? You do what young people are actually doing.
Already doing,
which is, hey, if I don't think that I'm going to ever retire in my life, I'm going to go and travel and enjoy my life while I'm young, you know, because that was the promise. The promise was toil, 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 and then you'll be able to rest. Maybe, maybe not. It was, you will be able to buy a house. You will be able to do this. And it's like, no, you can't. So they're like, okay, fine. Then I'll go and do these things now. I'll go enjoy my life. I hear a lot about how young people, there was a story that came out, actually, some woman on a podcast, and she actually had to apologize because someone asked her the story about how they wanted one of their young employees to attend a meeting, but it like at 8 a.m., but work started at 9.
Yeah.
And the person said no. And there was a lot, and the podcast host criticized it, really, you know, and oh boy, they heard it because there was this, and you know why the kids said no? Because they had a workout class, an exercise class they were going to go to first and do that. So they couldn't do that. So here's someone, we're constantly telling people,
prioritize yourself.
Yes. You know, workout, exercise, do it in the morning. So you don't, you know, and here we go. Booked a time, paid for the class before work started. They are doing exactly what they need to be doing, but now they're being criticized and you're telling them, oh, throw that money away that you spent on the class. Do this because I want to, because they're saying, no, this is not what we agreed to. We agreed to 9 o'clock and that's when I'm going to show up. And they've had to do that because not only are they not being paid but they've got things to do and they want to enjoy their lives. And the other part of this are these phones that we have that, again, we criticize young people for having these phones. And again, I just want to say it was baby boomers that made the phones and Gen Xers put the phones in our kids' hands. Again, it's not a criticism. We aren't bad guys. We didn't know, but they did not create this. We created this. So now they have these phones, and for them, their mental health is really what they've figured out is, I have to really prioritize my mental health in order to deal with all of these pressures of being able to work all the time.
Yeah.
And when I was 22, I did not think about my mental health at all. Yeah. Why? Why would I? I was too busy being ambitious.
Also didn't drink water. We didn't know. There's like one of the things that my husband and I talk about is that our friends' kids, and we have a niece that's 26, and we have friends' kids that are down to about like, well, actually down to 2, but the core of them are between like 7 and 17, I would say. And these kids know a shit ton more about emotions than I ever did.
Yes.
At that age. They are having different conversations, and they're having different conversations because, again, we grew up in a way that said, hey, only your happiness is real. And then we had kids and we were like, babe, hold on. Actually, there's a couple of, and you guys had kids and said, actually, we were never allowed to have any emotion at all. So we're going to talk to our kids about every emotion all the time.
Yes. Right?
Like there's
the swinging.
So kids are a lot more emotionally mature these days. But the thing that I want to get into before we wrap up is this idea that one of the things that I think happens and happened to me and happened to you, which is why I think it's important to talk about now, is that we choose a path and we forget while we're on the path to assess it and see if it still fits.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can we find a way to take 2 or 3 minutes to give people permission who are doing that right now to say, yeah, I know that this was the path that you thought you were going to be on. And I know you got to the place that you thought was going to be good, but it's not matching what you thought it was going to feel like. Mm-hmm. So sunk cost fallacy, it's okay to leave. Can we do that?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Because all of those things taught, all of that's great information. That's when I think about it, and people will say this to me, like, I just want to find my path. And when I think about it, it's like, I think about all these paths that move in all these different ways. And that's what life is. It's doesn't, you know, at the time, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's that Steve Jobs quote, like, you only make sense looking behind you to understand why these things happen in the order that they happened. But absolutely. And that's the way in which you can do that is through getting quiet and reflection, and burnout absolutely hits against that, right? That's the pull. When you're burned out, you cannot do those things. Yeah. And then we go to people and say, okay, well, you need to figure out these things before you get burned out. But by the time you get there, what I find is that people are already pretty burned out. And I think that, and I don't know what you've noticed or seen, but what I've seen just being a therapist going through these last 5 years since the pandemic is the burnout is deeper, more real, more. I mean, we are really burned out on a different, I feel like on a different level than the burnout that was. Cause I, you know, I burned out at 27. I, you know, but I didn't feel the heaviness and weight that I feel today. And we have to recognize that young people, their brains aren't completely fully formed. They are still trying to figure out who they are. So if I'm struggling with this, think about that young person. They're really struggling with this. But that was one thing with millennials, I will say, when they started showing up in my practice, was they very much, they really understood their emotions much better. There was a lot of language around it. And obviously, and they sought help and they knew what to do. Yeah. Like a lot of them were like, I am not happy. I need to go see a therapist. I need to go do that. So there was a lot very proactive in that sense.
Yeah.
And of course, how do you move that forward? How, you know, what's the next thing? It's like Gen Z. They're out there. My Gen Z clients crack me up because they're like, Mom, I'm on phone therapy. You know, I mean, they will tell anybody, that's my therapist told me this, this, and this. Like so out there. And so much like, this is not shameful for me to do that. I mean, they've taken the shame out of mental health. They really have. Yeah. And it started with millennials and it's moved down, but it really is. I mean, this is what we have young people to think is that we are more emotionally intelligent. We can have better conversations about emotions. We are more understanding because of these things. And that's important.
And we're willing to reach out and actually get help for the things we need help with.
Yeah. Yes.
And there's still a shame and stigma when it comes to burnout specifically.
Yes.
People are more ready to talk about their depression than they are about their burnout because people are still blaming themselves for burnout a little bit, no matter how hard I try to convince them not to. But there's still a little bit of that we're working through.
Yeah.
Last couple of minutes, is there anything that you feel like you need to let people know while we're here? Something sitting on your chest.
I'm trying to think. No, not really. I mean, I just, for me, the key, and this is a lot of what I talk about in the Gen Mess with Test, the key really is it's perspective, it's empathy, it's noticing your biases. Like what are my biases? What assumptions am I making about someone? Am I prejudging them? That's the whole thing is that this is a big issue with the generations at work. Our technology is just going to keep advancing. So these generations are going to become, you know, each generation will have like 3 or 4 mini generations, I think, within that. So things are going to keep moving and moving in that direction. So it really is about you, the individual, making a conscious choice of let me not assume, let me have empathy, let me put myself in their shoes and to understand them. And that's what the Embracing Gen Z talk is. I just want people to really like picture yourself, think about this for a second. Yeah. Now, tell me, how do you feel? And yeah. then once people can get into that headspace, they can better understand how to manage young people. But there's lots of little things that you can do, tips and tricks and such. But at the core, that's the shift that has to happen. If that doesn't happen, the rest of this stuff is just lip service.
So folks, Friday fam, listen up. Same thing holds true for your burnout recovery. The thing that you have to do is stop and listen and get curious and be willing to talk about it and be willing to ask yourself questions and be willing to get the help that you need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same set of principles used internally and externally. Yeah. The other thing that I've noticed about burnout recovery is it does lead to more empathy. And there are brains mm-hmm. for that, but it does lead to more. So if you're feeling really fucking frustrated with a generation at the moment, deal with your own burnout and that might mm-hmm. just naturally get better.
Yes, that might be part of it too. Yes.
Tess, thank you so much.
Oh.
Fried fam, we'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, and go ahead and leave us a review so that we can reach all the people in all the places, because that is one of the best ways to help us push up our ranking. So if you haven't done that and you would like to do that, I would love you for it. Hearts, hearts, hearts. Thank you. And until next time.
What if you could step into a room filled with the people who hold the keys to the big stages, the book deals, and the most powerful platforms for your voice? The Gateway Gathering and Pitch Fest is a visibility accelerator for thought leaders that connects you to the people who can open doors. Think literary agents, TED leaders, producers, editors, and conference designers like me, Jacqueline Fletcher Johnson. Join us January 13th to the 15th. Put your mission in motion at gateway-project.com.
Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, burnout expert, keynote speaker, and author focused on burnout as a match issue at work. Fried looks at burnout as information, not failure. When people, roles, expectations, leadership behaviors, and systems fall out of alignment, burnout is often the signal. Seasons 1 through 10 of Fried focus primarily on individual burnout and recovery, and those episodes are still available. You can use the Fried episode finder to find the conversations that best match what you're dealing with right now. Starting in season 11, the focus shifts to the workplace. The conversations center on how leaders and organizations can improve match and get rid of burnout in realistic, sustainable ways. I also work directly with companies and events through burnout and emotional intelligence keynotes, workshops, and longer-term advisory work. If burnout has been getting your attention, this podcast will help you understand what it's pointing to and how to find a better match.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.